AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Okay, from golf balls and washing machines to cornflakes and beef. Consumers are looking for more in the products they buy, and in many cases, the more they are looking for is proof from producers that what they are selling was produced in an environmentally friendly and sustainable way. Oh, yeah, and deliver it that way too.
Live from Tuesday Threes Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with BJ Johnson from Clear Flame Technologies. Then it's on to Dr. Brad Morgan from Colorado State University. And right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now welcome the host of AgriTalk, Chick Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate it. It's another soggy morning here in Northeast Iowa. The rain was falling earlier this morning. It's not like we got a ton of rain, but we got enough rain on top of some already wet soils that the planting delays are going to continue in this part of the world, dude.
It's always sunny inside the tanning booth. I can confirm, by the way. I feel I got a spring in my step today. I got me a little bit of that fake sunshine. It feels so good. So good.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I'm a tawny bronze right now. You can't see me. I wish you could. Yeah.
Well, you sound tan.
Thank you for noticing. Thank you.
You sound like you're glowing. You really do. You really do. I wish we could get a little bit of the real stuff out there and make some progress on getting this corn crop planted. We talked last week about Iowa making some progress, and they did. They went from 2% complete to 9% complete in the week ended May 1. But normally we would have about 42% of the corn crop planted. That's the five-year average.
Here in Iowa,
Nationally, 14% done. We would normally be one-third done as of May 1. It's starting to feel more and more real. Now, this supported the slow plantings, supported corn prices in the overnight, but here we are trading lower again today. The downside momentum that we built up yesterday is a little hard to overcome. There is no question about that. Bean planting progress nationally, 8% complete versus five-year average of 13%. So, and the winter wheat crop got worse. We've got the same amount in the good to excellent category, but the fair category is down 4%, and it all went to poor to very poor. Yeah.
Okay. Because I looked at that and saw, 27% rated good to excellent, unchanged from last week. Maybe we're leveling off here. Maybe we're not.
All right, let's get to the rest of the news. What you got?
Chip, U.S. and Western officials believe Russian President Vladimir Putin could formally declare war on Ukraine as soon as May 9 to coincide with Victory Day inside of Russia, which commemorates that country's defeat of the Nazis in 1945. Ukraine says it sank two Russian naval vessels in the Black Sea as a Russian missile attack killed civilians in Odessa and heavy fighting continues in eastern Ukraine. Russia is reportedly assembling an economic relief package equivalent to tens of billions of dollars to soften the blow of Western sanctions. Meanwhile, we've talked about the attacks on the agricultural infrastructure. Yeah. And now this, Ukraine is forecast to encounter a significant shortage of grain storage facilities for this year's crop due to a sharp decline in exports resulting from Russia's invasion. If they don't have any place to send the exportable supplies, where are they going to go, Chip?
Well, I don't know. The real question, well, I don't know if it's the real question. The extended question on that is if the facilities are already full, are they vulnerable to attack? And where are you going to put a new crop?
Right.
That's the big concern. Right. Yeah.
Well, Hungary said that it would not support an embargo on Russian oil and gas, and Slovakia said that it would seek an exemption from any European Union-wide oil ban. These comments came after the German finance minister said Germany would be, quote, able to bear an embargo, paving the way for a ban on the import of oil from Russia, which would come into effect by the end of the year. In other news, U.S. tariff relief on China is reportedly under consideration at the White House as the Biden administration confronts the strongest inflation readings since the early 80s. Speaking at the Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai remarked, quote, all tools are on the table. Meanwhile, last week, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen also proposed phasing out Trump-era tariffs on merchandise imports from China to provide price relief to Americans. Wednesday is widely expected to bring a 50 basis point hike in interest rates, but it will be what Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says during his presser that will garner the most attention. Most still expect this week's rate boost to be followed in June with another half point increase. Meanwhile, in response, 10-year Treasury yields have hit 3% for the first time since 2018. Watching those Treasury yields, Chip.
Absolutely we are, and it's a big deal to a lot of farmers haven't really dealt with rising interest rates for some time.
Well, Chip, Forgotten Harvest, which is a food bank which serves the Metro Detroit area, said demand has increased 25 to 45% since December in different areas it serves. In March alone, demand rose 30% compared with the previous month. Christopher Ivey, a spokesman for the food rescue, told the Wall Street Journal that Metro Detroit is at the front of the bell curve, experiencing economic ripples before they hit other parts of the United States. And finally, extreme heat in India is, quote, testing the limits of human survivability. According to a climate expert last month, New Delhi saw 7 consecutive days over 104 degrees Fahrenheit. In some states, the heat has damaged crops and put pressure on energy supplies as official warned residents to remain indoors and stay hydrated. Chip.
All right. All right. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate that. Let's bring in Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hey, Chip. How are you?
We're doing all right. Let's talk about efficiency in that dairy parlor, you know, maximizing the milk check and minimizing the feed bill, right?
Yeah, it's something everybody's trying to obtain.
Yep.
We want to, of course, take full advantage of record or near record milk prices. And Brian Bassin, who's a nutritionist, told me earlier this week that you really got to push for those components as much as possible now more than ever before. And if you can, harvest and maintain the best possible forages. All the savings, Chip, add up. Really what we need to be doing is reviewing feeding ingredients and understanding why you're feeding them and decide if they really add value in the diet today. Mm-hmm. Consider working with a broker to better manage the margin between feed costs and the milk check, understanding what your dairy needs are, and work to lock that in. You know, Chip, decisions are being made that are hard on the heart, right, but easier on the checkbook. And for example, one dairy producer has made the decision to sell 100% of their heifer calves, and purchase all their replacement needs monthly. Obviously, this is a giant financial swing, but one that makes sense for them today. So as guys go out into the field, there's obviously lots of windshield time this spring. They need to think about how they can maximize the profit, which of course is easier said than done in this crazy time. And I would just suggest calling your nutritionist or your financial advisor or really another dairy farmer. And as you contemplate different scenarios, talk with them and walk with them through those different scenarios to help maximize profits this spring.
Yes, absolutely. Karen, the emails and comments that I've been getting from dairies and from beef producers about how they are making adjustments to the rations and trying to make it as efficient as they possibly can, some really, really interesting and some interesting options out there available. Karen, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Chip.
All right, we've got BJ Johnson, Clear Flame, up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
That is,
yeah, the trumpet doesn't have the same effect as the cowbell.
That is not a cowbell.
I experiment, you know? I'm an experimenter, a scientist, if you will. And I'm calling this this research conclusive. Listen, the trumpet can't replace the cowbell.
I would say that that is conclusive. And let's bring in another researcher, scientist.
Ooh, yes.
This guy is an inventor, and is the technology that he is working to bring to the marketplace gets back to what I was talking about in the open. Consumers are looking for proof that what they are buying was produced in an environmentally friendly, sustainable way, and they want it delivered that way as well. And BJ Johnson, co-founder and CEO of Clear Flame Engine Technologies, is working on that second part, making sure that it's delivered in a sustainable way. BJ, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well. How are you guys?
Good. Good, good, good. I could use a little bit of sunshine. Davis is taking it in artificially, which
Roger
is
that.
A little disturbing to everybody.
Trying to think about it.
I would like to get a little natural sunlight going. You're over there in northern Illinois, right?
I am here in the Chicago area. The weather is not any better here, and I could also use the sunshine.
That's right. Exactly. BJ, when you were on AgriTalk at the end of last year, you talked about the Clear Flame engine technology. But remind me and the listeners about what the Clear Flame engine technology is working on. What are you doing?
Yeah, of course. So at a very high level, you can think of our technology as a modification that can be made to a diesel engine, either with an OEM or as a retrofit, that makes the engine fuel agnostic. It enables it to perform like a diesel engine and offer all of its economic and practical value, but freed from the need for petroleum diesel fuel. And as part of that, Clear Flame chose to go to market with ethanol as our fuel so that we can combine the performance benefits of the diesel engine design with the lower fuel costs and lower emissions of ethanol. And I do mean ethanol emissions, in the broadest possible sense, not just the CO2 that you were referring to in sustainable deliveries, but also things like soot and smog, which really impact air quality as well.
Right, right. These fuels that you're talking about, I get the impression that those are both ends of the spectrum. You've got diesel on one end of the environmentally friendly spectrum and ethanol on the other. How is it a blend of ethanol that you're burning in these engines?
No, so this is just the regular blend stock E98 that is going to come out of any ethanol plant in the country. So rather than taking that ethanol and having to blend it into gasoline, which would work for Clear Flame in theory, you know, our strong preference is the economic and environmental benefits get better just using it as a straight fuel. If you don't need that petroleum blending, why would you do that? And since Clear Flame doesn't need it, we're committed to the E98.
Okay. You've got a truck on the road now, right?
Correct.
How's it working?
It's doing great. It is everything that you would expect out of a diesel truck. We're running it through our own internal tests right now, running it with professional drivers to make sure to ultimately get to the goal of they can't tell they're not driving a diesel. Making great progress on that effort, planning for our first fleet handoffs that we're going to make to some fleets in the agriculture sector in June and July, scaling up towards the larger commercial non-agriculture logistics fleets in the late summer.
It's coming that soon? I thought this was still a ways away, BJ, but that's coming right up.
Yeah. So now there are still some efforts that need to happen before commercial sales. We have to go through the EPA approval process, which does take time, but it's what's required to prove that our product is safe. So we're very supportive of that. That likely won't be done until late 2023, but that doesn't actually stop us from getting the technology on the road, proving that it works, proving people want it, generating orders. So we're building up to our first four or so trucks right now. We do have an investment from John Deere that we're looking to put agriculture equipment in the field before the end of this year, and really scaling up these truck pilots even into 2023 so that we can really build traction even in advance of sales.
Okay. BJ, I can hear the questions out there about power production from this engine. Is it on par with what you're getting from diesel?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what ClearFlame is able to unlock, is to, as I said, make the diesel engine fuel agnostic, which means its performance is not different between diesel and ethanol. So same power output, same torque curves, same load acceptance, even sounds the same. It is a diesel engine in every sense of the word besides the fuel.
Even sounds the same. Okay.
Which is not always a good thing in all applications, but it does have that traditional diesel engine sound for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What about initial cost? Is it competitive?
Yeah. So we're looking at a few different routes to bring this to market. You know, doing this as an OEM product, it is the exact same assembly process that you would use for a regular diesel engine. You're still putting injectors into engine heads onto blocks. It's just an ethanol compliant injector instead of a diesel compliant one, a little bit of different plumbing. To do it as an aftermarket retrofit, there is a labor cost, of course, to, you know, pull in the pistons, adding some surface treatments, putting them back in. We have a TCO, a total cost of ownership analysis, that actually was just published on Friday of last week that answers a lot of those questions.
Okay, that's exactly where I was going next, BJ. What about the cost to run the vehicle or the truck or the tractor? Is that competitive? You know, I'm asking that at a time when we've got diesel on the road at what, an average of 530 or something like that?
Yeah, no, obviously the economics today are comically good, and I don't want to get lost in the noise of people thinking I'm coming out of the woodwork to talk about economics now when diesel's at five. No, this has been economically viable based on the economics we've seen the last 5 years or so. You know, that is why we chose ethanol as a fuel, not because it's clean, and it is clean and that's great. But at the end of the day, economics is what drives adoption. And the fact that we can motivate adoption by saving people money while also allowing them to move their goods sustainably, plant their crops sustainably, that's a win-win, but the economics have to be there, and they absolutely are.
Okay. I know that, you know, ethanol has a low vapor pressure, which can create some issues, some starting issues when the temperatures get cold. Has that been tested?
Correct. Yeah. So the low vapor pressure issue, that's an issue with a spark ignition, a gasoline style of engine. The way ClearFlame works, because it's running the diesel cycle, not to get too far in the weeds, it's the ignitability. So you do have to run a standard diesel cold start process, you know, where you turn the key, you wait for the little coil to go off, and then you crank. You will have to do that. But that's how you overcome any of the ignitability issues.
Okay. How does it, on the cost side of things, how does it compare to any of the early electric initiatives that are out there?
It's a great question. It's one of the things that is also addressed in that TCO study I was talking about. It is extremely favorable compared to any of the electric or hydrogen-based solutions. And I don't mean that as a knock on EV. Their economics just work much better in the light-duty passenger car type application. So, you know, we're competing against diesel. If we reach a world where we're competing against EV, it's almost a can't lose for ethanol. In these heavy duty spaces.
Okay. What about range? That's one of the big deals with EVs, is you just can't get any range out of it. I would guess that it all depends on how big of a fuel tank you can put on it, but is it similar to diesel?
It is the fuel tank question, just like you said. So ethanol, it is lower energy density. You do have to use more of it to go the same distance. Now, the good news is the fuel is cheap enough that even if your miles per gallon are going down, which they will, your dollars per mile are still also going down, which is what you really care about.
Right.
Now, the question then is, do you have a slightly larger tank or do you refuel slightly more often? Because we're talking about a standard liquid that just sits in the glass, both of those are really negligible changes in behavior, and some fleets will choose one and some will choose the other, but it's not the massive range hit you get with EV, nor the long refuel time, because you're still just pumping something into a tank, which is a huge advantage.
Absolutely. The time that it's going to take to charge those batteries. This is fascinating. Take us through the timeline of when do you expect that this will be commercially available?
The trials, as I said, will be starting this summer. The commercial availability will likely be in late 2023 for the trucks. I mentioned the John Deere partnership that's going to be in the field this year. I'd have to kind of defer to them on when they're planning commercial rollout, but I would imagine it would be a year or two after that truck timeline. And the third vertical where we're getting a huge amount of interest right now is in power generators, basically replacing diesel power generators with ethanol ones. And those actually have the lowest regulatory hurdles. I could see those in early 2023.
BJ, this is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. We've got to stay in touch and continue to bring updates to the AgriTalk listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I appreciate all the support from the network.
Excellent. That's BJ Johnson, co-founder of Clear Flame Engine Technologies.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, the gains that we saw when the overnight trade was suspended earlier this morning, they're gone in the corn market. What's going on there?
Yeah, no real news, I don't think. We filled yesterday's gap on the charts, and then we saw buyer interest kind of just dry up. And so I don't know if it's short-term topping action that we're seeing in here. We're just seeing the buyers stall out a little bit or what the case is. But definitely just haven't found sustained buyer interest and have turned lower here mid-morning like you talked about. The wheat market very similar to that price action, and they didn't have as much strength overnight, but did show some strength, and now we've seen that dry up here during the daytime trade.
All right. Soy complex, very quickly, a little bit of strength in the old crop market, some pressure on the new crop beans. Bean oil is trading to the upside. But let's go over to the livestock market. We've got some follow-through buying in the cattle complex. That's good news.
Absolutely. So feeder cattle, as you would expect, with corn turning lower here, they've pushed to the upside. And we're seeing moderate to strong gains in the front end of that market, lesser so in the back end. But good solid gains. And then live cattle pushing higher as well. So maybe just technically, you know, signs of a bottom, but maybe we can see strength again in the cash cattle market that develops later on this week.
Yeah, it's a process to put a bottom into that cattle trade. Lean hogs still under pressure.
Yeah, speaking of process and putting in a bottom, they haven't even started that process in the hog market and facing moderate to heavy pressure on follow through there. So just breaking down technically even more so.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
Stressed down a run lane, racing down the interstate, spilled hot coffee down the front of my jeans.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Fascinating technology, Davis. In the ability to use that 98.5 ethanol blend and generate the kind of power that they need for the long haul guys or for field work. I mean, it's the opportunity there is unbelievable.
And that it actually sounds like a diesel engine, too.
Yeah, that's, it makes them feel better about it, I think.
I think so. That makes me feel
so
better.
Too. Huh. Yeah. All right. So that is delivering the products that are being produced in a more environmentally friendly, sustainable way. Let's get to some of the production of what consumers want out there. And, you know, I got to let you know that at Learn Ron tweeted at us. He says, to overcome the consumer resistance to ethanol, why don't we just call it corn whiskey?
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, Ron, I think if you want to talk about the food versus fuel debate being intense, go ahead and start that one. I don't know if we want to do that, but let's get to beef and talk about sustainable production of beef. Dr. Brad Morgan, professor of animal science at Colorado State University and a participant in the U.S. Roundtable on Sustainability for Beef. Dr. Morgan, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much.
Glad that you are here. Why is there a U.S. Roundtable on Sustainability for Beef? It's been around for years, but why is it there?
You know, a couple of reasons, in my opinion. One is, as you know, it's time as an industry. And when I say industry, I'm talking about people like my mom and dad in southeastern Oklahoma that raise cattle, people in the stocker phase, the feed yard phase, the packing phase, retail, restaurateurs, as well as at-home consumers. It's time that we join hands and try to be more efficient. But more importantly, it's also, in my opinion, time as an industry that we talk about what we're already doing, how sustainable we already are, and some of the goals and plans that we all want to work on together in the next 6 to 8 years to make this product as user-friendly, planet-friendly as it can possibly be. So a lot of it's just coordinating at each one of these production interfaces and trying to make sure what we are doing is beneficial to people up and down the line.
Okay. So there was a meeting last week. What was accomplished? Was there progress made on this?
Yeah, and if you would have told me 2 or 3 years ago that we would have a common set of goals, a blueprint of things that we need to work on together, and that we were all going to try to coordinate these efforts across the different sectors. If you'd have told me that, I would have said that, you know, you're at the wrong meeting. It was actually very pleasant to hear this is the goals, this is what we need to try to do, and this is the timeline in which we need to do it in. It was something that was very pleasant, and it was agreed upon. It was a passed. And now it's part of the roundtables, virtually their bylaws, that we're going to work on this together, and we're going to get some things done, and we're going to talk about things that we're already doing, because we've got a great story to tell, and we need to tell our story.
Okay. All right. Well, the first issue was defining sustainability, right? And For me, when profitability was included in the definition of sustainability, that's when the real progress started to be made, right?
Oh, yeah. You know how we are. We do this for a reason, obviously. And you know, according to a lot of people, the definition of sustainability is being able to be in business, you know, 10 years from now and be profitable. Yeah. Obviously, the financial part of it obviously has to make sense. And again, yeah, it's something that certainly has certainly helped us move the needle in some progress, for sure.
Okay. All right. So when we talk about sustainability in the beef industry, is it for the producers, for the cattle producers out there, is it a question of gaining sustainability, or is it a question of doing a better job of communicating that beef production is sustainable?
Yeah. Oh, I'd say both. It's a okay. double-sided sword. For instance, I'll use an example. We have a lot of feed yards, for instance, that when they scrape the pens, clean the pens, take all the manure out of the pens, they go directly onto cornfields that are in the adjacent area of the feed yard. They've eliminated a lot of use and need for any type of synthetic fertilizer. They grow the corn. The corn then goes to the ethanol plant that's across the road from the feed yard. They go ahead and produce ethanol, and then all of the distiller's grains then will go to the feed yard, and it'll be fed to cattle. And then the cattle do very well on that. And obviously the cattle then will, dirty up the pen again. And it's that's a circle that needs to be talked about in our industry. And this is pretty common practice in a lot of these facilities today. Yep. So it's a win-win for all parties involved. And it's a story that we need to tell.
Okay. What kind of production practices could move the industry further down the sustainability path most quickly?
Well, obviously, one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that anything that we can do to improve the performance of an animal, whether it be at the ranch, at the feed yard, wherever, anything we can do to where that animal is going to be more thrifty, more efficient, more productive, and you shorten the days on feed, for instance, of that animal, those are things that obviously will benefit, whether it be methane production, water usage, those types of things. So that's an example in that I think a lot of the technologies that are used, a lot of the science that is developed, all of these go hand in hand to helping us improve efficiency and in turn improving sustainability.
Okay. Where are we in the process? Where are we in the process, and what kind of value have we identified that consumers are putting on the sustainability aspect of beef?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll tell you where we're at. And my colleague, her name is Kim Stackhouse Lawson. She would be, in my opinion, the forefront expert in the sustainability space. She heads a program here at Colorado State called Ag Next, in which she's in the process of putting her team together. She's in the animal science department, but there'll be people on the Ag Next team that'll be in the water research space, in the nutrition space, in the agronomy space, that would all report to her. And it, because there's obviously many of these things that dovetail. It was real easy to pass those goals and those efforts at the meeting last week. Now it's when the work really begins. And that's a lot of it's going to be coming out of her shop. A lot of it will be coming out of Cal Davis's shop, University of California, Davis. But we're really and truly just on the doorstep, finally, of putting teams together and doing this type of work. Why? Because there's a lot of people that are interested in it. There's a lot of people that are wanting to fund it, this type of research. The other thing, too, is even the financial sector is starting to get involved, because ever how efficient and how we improve sustainability, that's going to have a dramatic impact on lending ability or an operation to be able to get a line of credit to do business. So there's a lot of, you mentioned the financial incentive. There's a lot of it from that standpoint also. I was talking to Kim, and what you're going to find out is that you need people like us and meat science. You need water experts. You need nutritionists. Yep. And it's going to have to be a team approach. But again, many of these publicly traded companies today, They have to report, they have to show, they have to show exactly how sustainable some of these different products and programs are. And that obviously has an impact on whether or not people want to invest in their company or not.
Right.
So from that standpoint, it's going to impact, but we are right on the doorstep of a lot of exciting things to get started.
Right, right. You know, after Drover's editorial director, Greg Henderson, came back from the meeting last week and meeting with you, he said that we're kind of, the industry on the sustainability issue is kind of where we were in the early 90s on the beef quality issue and getting everybody on the same page about beef quality. Is that a good comparison?
You know, Greg asked me that at that meeting, as you said, and I had never really thought about that, but, you know, I think he's exactly right. 1991, we did the first national beef quality audit. Why did we do the beef quality audit? Because there were some people, Chuck Lambert being one at NCBA, an economist. He had written a paper called The Lost Opportunities in Beef Production. That lost opportunities was saying because we had cattle that were too fat, too many dark cutters, too many bruises, too many abscess livers, not enough marbling, those types of things. What is the financial hickey associated with these quality defects? Obviously, before we could come up with that number, we had to go out and it goes right back to the Deming philosophies. Before you can improve quality, you have to try to measure some things. I think he's exactly right.
Okay.
Matt, we're doing that right now again, the beef quality audit, and we compare it every 5 years.
Okay, excellent. Dr. Morgan, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. We'll have to get together and continue the conversation later. Thank you so much.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
You got the bullets, I got the gun.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. Thank you so much for taking some time to sit in on the conversations today. Chip Flory joins me. Chip?
Yes?
Bro, I think you know this about me. I'm a free market guy. One of them free market types.
Yeah. Yep.
I believe that that our system works best when the free market is allowed to do what the free market does.
Right.
Conversations with
product.
Conversations with BJ Johnson from Clear Flame Technologies, Dr. Brad Morgan from Colorado State University. They're both talking sustainability. Mm-hmm. And let me just side note, there was a period of time, and I'm coming around, okay? Buzzwords irritate me.
Oh, yeah, me too.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yep.
And for a while there, it seemed like sustainability.
Oh, yeah,
vertical integrate. Don't be making up new words. You know, to try and push your sort of agenda, your thing that you think is important. Sustainability, I am definitely coming around to that concept, and I'll tell you why, because it's becoming a part of the give back to the consumer from the free market. Mm-hmm. If we take the idea, the way the free market works best from the consumer's perspective, does it work good? Can I count on it? Is it affordable? Does it improve my life in some sort of way? The consumer now has grown accustomed to the idea and is on board, I would dare say, with the concept that wheat, okay, well, if we're going to take care of climate change, if we're just going to take care of the environment, forget climate change. Let's just call it responsible environmental stewardship. Yep. I believe that the consumer is at least edging toward the point where sustainability is part of the give back from the free market. Mm-hmm. And both of these gentlemen,
it's got value.
Both of these gentlemen highlighted that value in what they're doing. One guy on the fuel side, one guy on beef production. Improved right. performance. Improved mm-hmm. performance was the message from both of those
cats. That was the first thing that he went to was, let's have an animal that performs better in the feedlot.
Yes.
Like, oh, awesome. Love that.
Yeah, and even Mr. Johnson from Clearflame, mm-hmm. you asked him, well, how does it stack up to the EVs or to a, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we really didn't start there. We didn't, you know, it's got to be good. I feel like is basically his message. And if it's good, then it will become a pervasive mode of doing things.
Right.
I love all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I found the conversation with BJ just fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. That the fuel can perform that way.
Yeah.
Given the right technology. You know, it's one of those things that we talk about, how ethanol is so bad for the engines and ethanol is this and ethanol is that. They run a high blend in Brazil in the same doggone cars that we've got on the roads here. Mm-hmm. What makes their technology, what makes their environment, what makes their use of the fuel that much different than what we are doing here? And they do it with the performance that they all want. They do it with the reliability that they all want of those engines. I just don't understand how the message on ethanol has gotten so negative. But this is one of those ways that we can really make a difference. Put mm-hmm. that kind of a power source in tractors and put them out in the field and they perform the way they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Put that kind of a truck on the road and it performs the way it's supposed to, the way that we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to me, man. Fascinating
yeah.
to me.
Yeah. And then transfer that over to Dr. Morgan's. Put those practices in place in the mm-hmm. feed yard.
Mm-hmm.
And see how those cattle perform the way they do.
Right.
One thing that they both sort of talked about was exactly what you said. You were just mentioning it on the fuel side. Dr. Morgan said we need to talk about what we're already doing.
Yeah.
And that messaging is, I think, if we can crack that code, man, whether it's on ethanol, whether it's on beef production, dairy production, whatever it is, if right. we can crack the code of communicating the message that, hey, we are not destroying the planet. In fact, our right. production, you know, our production practices are intentional and they are, I'm going to say it, sustainable. Whatever that word means.
Yep.
Sustainable. Okay. I think I'm getting my head around it.
So with all of that said, you know, it's got, as like you said, it's got to be good. It's got to be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay. With all of that said, I agree with that. I agree with that. But the simple fact to me that it is consumer driven
mm-hmm.
makes it worth doing.
Yes.
Can you imagine if we were still making beef like we did in the late 80s or in the 80s and into the mid 90s?
Yeah.
I can't imagine that the demand would be as good as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
We were part of it. It was just not the most attractive dinner. It was steak, but it wasn't what it is today, that's for sure. So as we continue to make progress, we've got to keep an eye on what does that consumer want. And as long as it is good, as long as it is the right thing to do, then we should participate in it.
Because that breeds the sort of sustainability that you're looking for the producer. The consumer ultimately will pay the producer to produce.
Yes, that's it. So when you put the financial, the profitability into the sustainability definition, then it starts to make a whole lot more sense. Hey, good stuff, Davis. Good work, man.
Yeah, man.
All right. Thanks for listening this morning. Really appreciate it. Come back this afternoon. Going to have a conversation with Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company right here on AgriTalk.